Jones versus Town of Cedar Lake. Mr. Ruff.
May it please the court, counsel. I believe the law for our case was really discussed in the immediately preceding case. We're looking at the actions of Officer Brittingham on the basis of an objective, reasonable standard. And, of course, police officers have to act quickly, so there's some deference given to them as well. The point that I would make, our position, though, is that although you look from the position of the police officer and it's an objective standard and it's a reasonable police officer standard, you must look at the facts as presented by the plaintiff. You can't, and if you look at the plaintiff's version of the facts under this test, then there was a jury question as to whether Officer Brittingham's actions were objectively reasonable under the circumstances. Facts really from the plaintiff's position are not that complicated. Plaintiff admitted he had five or six beers that night. He stated, which is contradicted by Officer Brittingham's testimony, but the plaintiff stated he walked home from the tavern and he had the five or six beers without incident. He went into his house, he had his girlfriend was taking a bath, so he decided he was going to walk across the street to his friend's house. While still on his property, according to him, Officer Brittingham came up a gravel road which was part of his property. Now, the defendant had two prior run-ins with Officer Brittingham and had some problems with the Cedar Lake Police Department. He turned back to go back home. Two things he then said happened are he heard gravel running on gravel, crunching of gravel as though running. He heard Officer Brittingham say hey, heard someone say hey. The next thing he knew, he was on a stretcher and wrapped down and placed down into the stretcher.
But don't you have a problem because your client can't remember a lot of what happened, and possibly he was blacked out because he was drunk? And how can we conclude that the officer jumped on him? Isn't that speculation?
Well, our position is that it's not speculation. It's a reasonable inference from the evidence. He turned his back.
Why is that a more, following up on Judge Winsford, why is that a more plausible inference than that he passed out because of all the drinking he had?
Well, he was not unsteady in his feet and he was not intoxicated. He was used to doing this, so we have direct evidence that he was not intoxicated and that he was not unsteady on his feet. Now,
how many beers did he admit having?
Oh, there's no doubt this man was a steady drinker for a long period of time. But that did not mean that at that point he was drunk.
Well,
we have no evidence
when
one
he
way
was
or
arrested,
another.
He couldn't dispute, he couldn't answer the officer and tell him where he lived. Right?
He was mumbling, yes.
He was mumbling.
He was incoherent. He spent the next two nights in neurointensive care. He had been injured. So,
what do you think the police officer did? Come up and club him over the head with something? Or?
I believe the police officer. Certainly the evidence, there's sufficient evidence to go to a jury, in our position, that the police officer jumped him, yes.
Did what to him, precisely?
Jumped him from behind or pulled him down some way from
pulled
behind.
Pulled him down? Why would pulling him down cause these neurological injuries?
Hitting his head.
Pardon?
Pulling him down from behind.
Pulling him down from behind?
Tackling.
I don't understand you. Knocking him down so he just falls down on the grass or something?
And yes, on the ground, yes.
Falls down and has
hit
all these
head.
Terrible problems?
Yes.
The policeman knocked him down?
Yes. That is certainly a reasonable inference from the evidence.
It doesn't sound reasonable to me. If you're knocked, how old is this man?
His 30s or 40s, early 40s. I don't remember, Your Honor. I mean, I don't remember the age of the police officer
a very elderly person might knock him down, knock him out, but ordinarily, if you just push someone down on grass or whatever, what was the surface? Was it grass?
I don't remember if it was grass or gravel, to be honest. but he did.
Really sounds really strange, the credulity of the trier of fact to think that that's what happened.
Well, at some point, all of these issues become matters of common sense decisions.
Right, precisely. And
even as to a
make
judge.
Allegations that are strongly contrary to common sense, it's hard to see why one wants to have a rigmarole of a trial.
Well,
determine what is obvious, but he didn't make the case.
I imagine, Your Honor, one person's common sense is another person's non-common sense. It strikes me, and I would...
No, it's not common sense. It's not generally agreed.
I would then we have a difference of opinion that if somebody is pulled down from behind or knocked down from behind and hits their head, they can suffer these occasions.
Judge Simon in his findings though said, I'm quoting, however, Nichols actually did not testify that Birmingham used force, pushed him, or touched him with his hands at any point in time. All Nichols recalls is that he went down to the ground.
What he recalls is hearing running from behind him. He recalls Nichols parking his car. He recalls hearing crunching on the gravel. He recalls hearing the word hay. There's no evidence of anybody else in the location. And the next thing he remembers is being on a stretcher, with putting onto a stretcher, with, I think with a neck brace.
But again, Judge Simon says Nichols' testimony does not indicate that any force was used by Birmingham whatsoever.
Well, the point is that you must make a reasonable, you must be willing to draw the inference and say that a reasonable juror could draw the inference from these facts that he was tackled or brought down from behind.
If Birmingham assaulted him gratuitously, why would he call an ambulance?
Well, if he's injured, he would call an ambulance.
Why? He wants to injure him, right?
I don't know
Carol
why.
Carol Theory wants to injure him, so why call an ambulance?
I don't know if he would want to injure him or stop him or whatever his reasoning is.
Stop him for what? Look, according to your opponent, plaintiff admitted that after he consumed 5 or 6 beers, alcohol would affect his balance. Is that a correct representation of an admission?
I don't remember that. I remember his affidavit.
You can't remember.
I remember his affidavit stating that he was not unsteady on his feet and that he was not intoxicated. That's an affidavit we submitted. And I don't remember that as being contradicted by his testimony.
Was there a retaining wall in the area?
There was some kind of rise in which Birmingham said my client ran over and fell down. We're arguing facts. It's our position that the judge in the district court or in the appellate court should not put themselves in the position of a juror as long as there is reasonable inferences from which a juror could find that my client's
reasonable.
Position is.
It doesn't sound reasonable to me.
All I could respond, Your Honor, is in my opinion, it is reasonable. That is as reasonable as the version of Mr. Birmingham, and this was for a jury to decide, and not for a judge. Drawing all reasonable inferences on behalf of my client.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ruff. Mr. Clark.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Matthew Clark, and I'm here on behalf of the Town of Cedar Lake, Cedar Lake Police Department, and Carl Birmingham, officer for the Town of Cedar Lake. Your Honors, I'm asking that this court affirm the lower court's decision, the trial court's decision, and the grant of summary judgment, because there is no genuine issue of material fact to preclude summary judgment in this case. Judge Simon properly found that there is no evidence to support a constitutional deprivation, and that, if so, Officer Birmingham was entitled to qualified immunity. Mr. Nichols did make 2 claims, as the court was discussing, of excessive force and of a false arrest claim. With respect to the excessive force claim, there is no evidence that force was used in this matter whatsoever. The evidence, as Mr. Ruff indicated, was that there was gravel noise, that there was some running, and the word hay. I suggest to the court that's insufficient to, on an objectively reasonable standard, to have an excessive force claim pursuant to the Constitution. With respect to the false arrest claim, The district court properly noted the standards, finding with respect to the disorderly conduct that there was an intent to injure emergency medical technician Holstad, and that was uncontroverted. Mr. Nichols indicated that he did not recall what transpired between the two of them. So the undisputed fact is that Mr. Nichols was disruptive, combative, argumentative, and did attempt to pull Mr. Holstad to the ground. With respect to the public intoxication charge, the Indiana Code provides that if an individual is in the public arena and is stably intoxicated, that a charge could follow. As plaintiff admits, he had had 5 to 6 beers, that he was unable to identify who he was, where he lived, that he smelled of alcohol. He was unable to dispute that he was argumentative and combative, therefore a public intoxication charge. There was probable cause, which is the bar to any Fourth Amendment complaint. As this court noted in the Bell case, that it's judges rather than juries that can define these constitutional limits, and that as a matter of question of law, reasonableness is a legal standard, and not every single case needs to go to a jury. Therefore, I would urge this court to affirm the lower court's holding.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Clark. Mr. Ross, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Mm-hmm. Very briefly, there's no doubt my client was injured, whether it was from, according to the defendant and the court, he slipped because of intoxication, or he was taken down, according to us. He was injured. He did spend 2 days in neurointensive care. The evidence is he was mumbling, he was incoherent, he was bruised. That cannot lead to an intentional or reckless or knowing conduct. That would be the basis of the arrest for disorderly conduct. And also, Officer Brittingham knew his property, and my client was on his property, and Officer Brittingham knew he was because he had been there at least 2 times before. And under Indiana law, you cannot have be publicly intoxicated on your own property. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, both counsel.